Okay, so I'm grateful to be here tonight. Every time I share my story, I'm reminded that I'm not here by accident. I'm here by the grace of God, who is my higher power in this program. I didn't grow up in a normal, stable home. Addiction ran through my family. My grandparents struggled with their closet addictions and alcoholism. My parents struggled as well, but they're more like flamboyant, like out there. They didn't really care, you know? For most of my childhood, my parents were in and out of their addiction, jail, prison. My parents divorced when I was two. When I was one, my parents went through a rocky stage. Two, they divorced. And I was back and forth from different households, which were my grandparents. Then my stepfather came into the picture, and we moved to Mexico, to Tamaulipas, from Guadalupe. So I was back and forth from Mexico to my grandparents' house. I remember that she tried so hard. Dang, this old lady tried so hard. Imagine, she's like a 4 foot little, like short little Oaxaca lady, like, you know, she's like, she tried hard, you know. So, but it was just difficult because I was going from Tamaulipas to Guadalupe, and my grandma lived in Guadalupe, and she tried so hard. She put me in jazz, tap, ballet. The freak, it doesn't look like I wear a dress all the time. No, dude, you know? So I gave it to her. She tried, you know? She tried to put me in Catholic school. It didn't work. She tried to take me to church, the Catholic school. She had me in chess club. But as you can tell, her trying failed, you know? So it's just because I was back and forth from Mexico. And Mexico's pretty crazy, you know? So her structure and her opportunities fail. I think she was trying to save me before I even knew I needed saving, you know? But the efforts just went out the window because at a young age, I wanted to be like the lifestyle my parents had, you know? Even though I say that now, I used to tell my mom, like, I never want to be like your fucking ass, you know? Excuse my language. But, like, I wanted the kind of structure that her and my parents kind of had, you know, when I was little. At a young age, I wanted to be this lifestyle and my family in Mexico. And so my family, when I lived in Mexico, the lifestyle in Mexico appealed to me, you know, more than over here. But my addiction was already around me. And I thought holding a, so when I was little, I used to hold my uncle's sacks, right? So I used to hold them. I was like 5 or 7. I used to hold them sacks. And he was like, Amy, how can you go down the street and can you go take this? And I was like, yeah, because I got $20 out of it, you know? $20 got you a lot in Mexico. You can go buy Pogs. You can go, you know? Pogs. In my day, it was Pogs, you know? So, like, and I used to get candy and stuff like that. So I felt like I was seen and loved, you know? I had been through things that people from here had never seen, you know? So, in Mexico, where we're from, where my stepdad's from is Tamaulipas, right? So all you hear all day, as soon as you hit the border, are, like, rounds going off. Like, it's to the point where, like, in my grandparents' house, there's a tortilla shop that's downstairs, right? In our house, our apartment house is upstairs, and we have, like, holes in the wall, in the concrete. So it's just, like, a normal thing. Like, you used to have to, like, hey, my grandma would play this hide-and-go-seek. And I remember really being, like, 5, like, hey, what's coming with my chancla ahí? Like, go look for the chancla down there. So, you know, and I was like, what the freak, dude? So it was, like, just not normal. So I had seen things from here, like, never seen from here, you know? So the sounds and noises that were accustomed. So I grew to, like, how do you say? I grew desensitized to, like, emotions or, like, to things around me. So I didn't... Noises, like, loud noises, they don't faze me. Most people are like, oh, my God, you know, and I just sit there and be like, okay, you know? Then when we moved back with my mother... When I moved back with my mother and my stepfather to the U.S., it was a different lifestyle, you know? So my parents, my mom is a Chicana, you know? She was born here. My real father is, my mom's the second generation. My dad's the first generation, you know? So I'm the second generation on my dad's side. But their lifestyle here is different. My dad, my father would come every once in a while to my stepfather's house, my mom's house, to pick me up. Like, but he would come, and I remember baby jars in the back, you know? And I was like, dang. But I was like, oh, when he comes, I'm going to get all my presents, you know? He would have a whole envelope for my mom full of money. And then he would have, like, all my dolls and porcelain dolls. I don't even like dolls, but, you know, it's exciting just to have, you know? And I was more excited about the money and the pogs, you know? And I would see all these baby jars in the back, and I was like, what the heck? He's having another baby or what, man? And then I would see him, like, my uncles come outside and them ask for the crates and stuff, you know? But my father never kept it, like, never lied about anything, you know? My stepfather became a heroin addict at a young age, so I live in a household where, that my mother sold, crank. So my mother sold crank in Guadalupe, and my stepfather was a heroin addict, you know? So imagine my outings were, like, going to McDonald's on the weekends, you know? And to, that was my outing. Like, I got sausage biscuits because they were a dollar on the weekends, and then that was my outing and going home, you know? And then, with my house, well, that came, like, my house was a party house, so my parents used to party all the time. Like, my house was, like, a indoor-outdoor kind of thing. Everybody would come in and out, you know? In which the time era was kind of crazy. I was born in the 80s, you know? So it's a little crazier than it is now. So police used to hit my pad in my house. I mean, my house used to get raided all the time because my dad was a heroin addict, you know? Stepdad was a heroin addict, and my mom was, sold crank. So we used to get the house hit in all the time. Good thing we didn't lose it. It's my mom, my grandma's, but we used to get a hit all the time. And to me, that was normal. Every couple months, like, my house would get raided and get tossed up and then have to redo it again, you know? It's crazy. But to me, that was normal. It was nothing like hearing sounds going off in Mexico. It was better here, you know, because I didn't really have to, oh, it's just police coming in, you know? But I remember due to my parents being so busy into their own lifestyle, my mom was just, like, busy with a man. And I think I used to resent her. I used to, like, get pissed off. And I still, like, that was one of the biggest things on my resentment. This is my mom, because she revolves her whole world around a guy. And that's probably why I have guy issues. Like, I can't stand guys. I don't like them. They make me, you know what I mean? I just have, I don't like revolving my world around a guy. I'm the type of person where, like, now, because of that, I realize now with my steps that I realize that I'm more, like, independent. No, I got this. Like, I don't need a dude to do this. Like, I got it myself, you know? But, okay, so, and dang, it went off, huh? But I remember due to my parents being so busy and doing their thing, where did it leave time for me, right? So there's people inside of my house, in and out, and resentments due to individuals that couldn't keep their hands to themselves. So only way to act out and do something, I took the initiative and broke this dude's windows, right? So, okay, things happen when you don't pay attention to your child, you know? And I was the first child, and I understand, like, my parents were young themselves, and they did the best they could, you know? I guess you could say. So there's people inside and out, and there's, like, just some things happen, you know? So people that couldn't... So I remember breaking this dude's windows at 5 years old because of the stuff that happened to me, right? And my parents are like, why the fuck is she doing that, you know? So I got the car, ran away with my cousins, and went to, like, down the street where we used to... It's this bounded thing to go... ride motorcycles, because we had motorcycles. And then my parents are like, my mom didn't even care, dude. My mom didn't even care. It's crazy. My cousin got his butt beat because my aunt was looking for him, but I had the cops called at the house. I remember the cops not finding us till, like, 9 o'clock at night. And why'd you break the windows? Well, why do you think I broke the windows, you know? But my parents were just, like, swept it under the rug, like, and I was like, and I was wanting my mom to beat me, you know? Like, my aunt was beating my cousin. I was like, why isn't she hitting me, you know? She didn't even, like, flinch or nothing. But, so I remember a lot of that happening. Like, I would do things so my parents would, like, be like, hey, you know, like, and I would do them so that they would try to hit me. I would, like, scold me or something, do something, ground me or something, you know what I mean? So I pushed the limits with my parents in trying to get my addiction, my attention, and my love. Where today I have scars on my body for trying to do so. So when I started rebelling and kicking it with people from where I'm from, which is the projects in Guadalupe, I drank, I smoked weed when I was 9 and 10 years old. That's when I started partying. So I came home, I remember coming home, my first tattoo at 10 on my back. And I remember bending down, and I had, my parents were doing something, right? And I had my whole class at my house. And the projects are small, they're like cinder block, right? Apartment, two-bedroom apartment. I had all guad there, you know? And then I was like, dang, dude. I remember bending down. My mom's like, what the hell is that? And I was like, what does it look like, you know? She's like, I'm going to tell your grandma. I was like, why would you tell my grandma, dude? My grandma said, oh, that bunny's so cute. I was like, dang, dude. Like, I thought I was going to get scolded, but I didn't. So it just progressed with that. My family's a very type of family. Like, they just sweep stuff under the rug, you know? Like, oh, it's okay. She'll change. Or like, oh, my parents never scolded. My grandparents were just like, oh, it's okay, you know? So, like I said, I pushed the limits. My great-grandmother, I could do no wrong, right? So in my great-grandmother's eyes, I used to live with her when I used to come back from Mexico, when my parents were in Mexico, and I used to live with her. So I could run amok, and she wouldn't be like, nah, she's not doing that. Pelona's not doing that. She's okay, you know? I got into a relationship with a man when I was 12 that was way older than myself. Yeah, way older than myself. So, and it was the only reason that my family allowed it was because he's from the same town that my family's from. You know? And I feel like at times, like, they allowed it because who his family was. You get what I'm saying? So who his family was in Mexico, and I feel like they allowed it because of that. So, I was with him for a long time. So he allowed it. I became pregnant at 12 years old. I snuck out in the middle of nights to go be with him because he used to live down the street. And my parents knew, but I believe they truly did not say anything because of the dude's family, right? I started using meth when I was 12 or 13 while I was pregnant with my son. The first time I tried meth was with my real father on my 8th grade graduation. I gave him the money and I for my graduation money, and I blackmailed him, telling him that if he didn't go get it, like, he's no one to judge me. He's never been there. Like, he has nothing to, you know? So I used to blackmail him and tell him to go get it, and he did. So we partied, and I remember my mom coming. And it was like a party, like, for my 8th grade graduation. And I remember, like, hiding. I was in sweatpants and thing. And my parents were like, hey, you're getting big. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm not getting big. But they knew, but they didn't know, you know? They just swept it. And then I remember being so high. My mom, I came downstairs, and my mom had the beans and the rice for me to go to my 8th grade graduation party. And my mom was like, are you fucking high? And I said, what? I was like a deer in headlights, I guess. And she's like, hey, you look exactly like your dad. And I was like, what are you talking about? She's like, your eyes go black. When I'm in my addiction, my eyes go black, you know? So she's like, you look like your dad. And then here comes my dad. She's like, you guys are, what the hell? But did she do anything? No, she just left. She's like, here's your beans and rice. And then, yeah, here's your beans and rice and jam. You know? I was like, dang, all right. So I just kept pushing the limits. I kept using, you know? Let's see. I used manipulation and harsh words to get to my parents. That was my vibe I grew up in. Then I broke it down to him, my father, when I let him know I was knocked up. And he was the only one that was there for me when I was pregnant with my son, Alessandro. Dang, he's going to get me right now. I was going to make the decision with my son's dad that my son's dad didn't want my kid to be around my family. He didn't want that kind of thing. And he just started noticing me, like, just pushing the limits. So he didn't really, we're on off on edge, you know? And plus, he's like, you guys know what a bisa is, right? He's old school Mexican, he's bisa. So he's just like, he's like very different from how Chicanos over here are. So it was just like going rocky. So my mother and stepfather, my mother knew, but she denies it, you know? She didn't. So I remember my kid's dad was like, hey, we're going to go to Mexico because you're almost due. Like, you know what I mean? I remember my son was born July 13th. And I remember 2 weeks before that, I was pushing it, you know? I was like, I was already feeling it. I was already, you know how you know, like, when you start, when you're, a woman knows, like, when they're ready to go, you know? So then I remember taking my mom's ID. And I took her ID, and I was like, we're in TJ, we hit TJ by the third day, and in TJ, it's like loud. All you hear is boom, boom, boom. My mom calls, you have my fucking ID? And I said, what? I was like, she's all, you do? Where are you at? And I was like, And then my dude's in the background, and he's like, Pues dile la pendeja, like, tell the stupid ass that where we're at. And we're at to take you to freaking, to my grandma's to go. I was like, oh, God, you know? But she didn't know, like, till the fourth day I'm gone, you know? I was already down there a week, so. So I had my son in Mexico. And we decided for my son's father and his grandmother to take care of my son, you know? So my son Alexander was born. And I think that was the best decision at the time, you know? I don't want to say that it's not now, but it was the best decision at the time for me, you know? Dang. So I didn't know how to cope with the shame and the guilt, right? The fear. So alcohol and drugs took over, and I kept doing them till later on. They made me feel braver than I was. I numbed the guilt. They quieted the pain. I still seen my son, Alessandro, every Christmas when they would bring him up here or when I would go visit in Mexico. Even with all that, I graduated high school. Barely graduated high school. But I was heavily strung out, hard doing drugs. And I was like a garbage disposal. You know that Fred Flintstone movie? The little garbage disposal underneath? That was me. Like, anything I want, I wanted to try everything, you know? So by 15, I tried everything. I was heavily doing drugs. When my stepdad was out of prison, my parents started selling drugs from Mexico to Utah. And they eventually got caught in this drug ring with some other like people. So my stepdad went back to prison, my mom went back to prison, jail. But he took the charges, so she got out. I had already learned that chaos was normal. But like it says in the big book, what we think is a solution eventually becomes a problem. At 18, I tried to support myself, my mother's kids, and I started working two jobs and selling drugs. I used to sling it at the cooler where my aunt works, you know, and at McDonald's while I was going to school. But it was not enough. Well, it was never enough, you know. If you're partying and you're selling drugs at the same time, it's never enough. Like, you're barely getting by, you know. I was desperate. I met my second son's father, right? Which he's from here, which is a different, whole completely different life. Like, yeah, you know, he's like a, but he's a Chicano from here, and a different lifestyle than I was used to. I used to walk all over him. I was mean to him. I compared him a lot to my first son's father, you know. I got pregnant. I got my pad hit by the DOJ because of things that he used to do and my parents used to do. I gave birth to my son Junior, which is now, he's 16 now. And I continued to thrive on the lifestyle that I was accustomed to. That desperation led to jail, some home invasions, GBIs, burglaries, assault against officers, several GTAs, assault, domestic batteries. And eventually I lost everything that mattered. My father died due to his addiction. The woman that raised me died. And before I lost my son, I always said before I lost my son, I would never lose my son, you know? So I remember when my pad was getting hit by the DOJ. And I remember calling my aunt and I'm like, hey, you need to come get my son, you know? And before I like lost him, I was like, I signed the papers and like, here, take my son. Like, I don't want to have to go through this whole CPS thing, right? Dang. So losing my son broke something inside me, right? So when I was younger, I was emotionally, like, didn't have no emotions, right? I don't know how to say that, but my family used to call me the Grinch. But like, when you have a kid, you women are like sustained to be emotional, yeah? Does that make sense? Like, and not being a woman enough to raise my son or my other son, there's mistakes that, like, because not being a woman enough to raise the other one because of the mistakes or not wanting them to turn out like myself and myself not to turn out like my mother, like, I decided to give them up. Instead of getting better, I was introduced to heroin, a drug that I always told my family I would never touch, right? But don't ever say never. And heroin takes you to your knees. When fentanyl came into my life, I didn't understand how deeply it was, but if I'm honest, part of me didn't care. I was pushing the limit. I played Russian roulette with my life and pushed the limits, which I realized it was a form of suicide. It was, my mental stability was slipping. I can say today that I was trying to kill myself, because calling it that Drugs eat you alive. They strip your dignity. They strip you of every moral and pride that you ever had. They strip you of your hope. They strip you of who you are. By this time, I could never accumulate more than 6 months. Like, the longest I had was 5 months, almost 6 months out. It's the longest I've ever had. The rest were like, I did stunts for like, I remember I was looking at 12 years one time. By the grace of God, I didn't get the home invasion, but I got the GBI and I did 5. But it's always like 5-3, 5-3, you know? So I accumulated that in a rap sheet like this thick that I'm still trying to freaking get expunged, dude. They're not budging. in my fentanyl addiction and my running amok, my first son's dad's sister called me and his... So I remember I was in my addiction severely on fentanyl, right? And I remember my ex-sister-in-law calling me and she was like, in Spanish from Mexico, she's like, I need you and I'm wanted to come up with some money because Alessandro got into trouble. So my oldest son started selling drugs, right, in Mexico, and he just got into trouble, you know? She called me and was like crying, saying that they had took him from Guanajuato to Juarez, which is, Guanajuato, we're in the middle of Mexico. Juarez is all the way by the border. They took him to, Juarez. I remember the anxiety and straight anger that I had towards myself and to his father. I remember coming up hustling, and I hustled my butt off, like, I jacked all slow, like, after, like, I hustled my butt off so I can pay $2,000. His dad put $5,000 in, because he owed about $7,000, you know? But November 8th, 2023, at 2:45 a.m., we had paid the money, right? So they had, the people from Juarez were taking it back to Guanajuato, and the town of Senora, which is another town, had shot the car going to Guanajuato, right? So my son got shot in the head. He was 19 years old. He would be 23 today. Dang, my heart. Okay. Yeah, so there's no words for the kind of loss, you know? And the shame and the guilt that I felt because I never didn't raise my son, you know? Like, his grandma raised him, but, like, I still hold resentment for myself, mostly, but, like, for his dad, you know? That's something I'm still working on. The grief was suffocating due to my shame and guilt and what it was. The could have, every part of my disease seemed to be coming to get me. So I did what I was accustomed to, full force. I remember, like, going into my addiction. So from November 8th, when I found out he passed away, I just pushed it. And I remember picking up, like, a whole block of, like, fentanyl like this. And I just was getting high all day, dude. I was getting high all day, stealing cars. And I remember one day I was getting high so much that I OD'd 6 times one day. To the point where, like, one of the times, like, my friend didn't know how to revive me. And my friend was at the gas station down the street. And I was blue. I remember my whole body was hurting because he was beating me up, waking me up. It's not funny, but it's kind of funny. But, and it's just, like, my disease took me there, you know? Like, pain and grief take you there. Like, it's just crazy how shame and guilt can also keep you there, you know? Dang. So I told myself I deserved to escape. I told myself that with the fentanyl, like, I could survive, you know? But something different happened to me. I remember coming back from Mexico to see my mother, right? So I went to Mexico to go party. Told me to go. I came back, and I remember coming back in a stolen car, right? I have a thing for stolen cars, okay? So I remember coming back from Mexico, and I remember I was partying here with somebody, and I remember, like, we were going to take the car to the chop shop, right? And I remember this fool was like, yeah, but he's so scary, you know? So he grabbed the wheel, and I remember going on a high-speed chase, and he grabbed the wheel, we hit the pad, you know? And I remember running out of the house, like, cars, like, I was gone, you know? And then, but for some reason, like, my higher power, which is God, like, stopped me. You know, I got arrested that day. I went to jail. I was looking at some time. And I remember being locked up, right, on my knees and asking, like, my higher power, like, if you allow me to kick fentanyl, because kicking fentanyl is, like, no joke, you right? Kicking an addiction is no joke, period. But kicking fentanyl is, like, crazy. I remember being sick for, like, 2 months almost. And I asked him, like, if you help me, like, kick fentanyl, I swear to God, I'll be dedicated. I will never use again, you know? I'll never think about using. I'll do whatever I had to do in order to not use, right? So, well, that led me straight to NA and AA while I was incarcerated. I went to Bible studies. I stuck to it and didn't even look back. I wanted more after my sentence. So after my sentence, I had no tail. I asked for a no tail, you know, like, maxed me out. So after my sentence, my ex sent me an application, and he signed up my whole application for the rescue mission, which I didn't want to come. I didn't want to go, but he, you know, he set it up. So I went to program. I became someone else wanted me to. So I basically, at the beginning, I felt like I was doing it because he wanted me to do it, you know? So I became someone else wanted me to become. So I remember sitting there and I fought it. Like, my program manager was like, hey, she was crazy. She told the girls, like, at a house meeting, like, Gabby used to be crazy. Like, I had, like, no filter. I didn't want to fucking do it. I was, like, resistant, you know? So I started surrendering. But today, I know my higher power saved me for a reason, you know? Because if I feel if I'm still out there and I'm still doing what I was doing because of what happened with my son and, like, me just, like, trying to numb everything, I think I would have honestly been dead already, you know? But today I know my higher power, which I call God, put me in there for a reason. I arrived at the mission in May, 2 days before my second son's birthday. During my program, I have suffered loss and sickness as well. My grandparents both passed away in my time at the rescue mission. My best friend was killed with her kids, and my mother and my grandfather became ill. AA taught me something life-changing. There's no pain so great that a drink or drug won't make it worse. But because of this program, I did something different. I called my sponsor, I went to meetings, and I cried through them. I learned into the steps, I've learned into my heart, leaned into my higher power when I didn't even understand what that meant. I learned the 12 steps and the 12 traditions that surrender isn't weakness, it's freedom. Sobriety didn't remove my grief, it gave me the strength to walk through it without destroying myself. Today I'm coming up on 3 years sober. And my life looks nothing like it used to. I look and act completely different than I used to. I'm an A student with a 4-point GPA. I have one semester left in completing my Associates of Arts in Science, another semester for my Associates in Art of Liberal Arts, and to becoming a counselor. So I have 3 degrees. I'll be coming up in February and fall. The girl who lived in chaos and who lived in and partied in the riverbeds, hotels, Mexico, and used to think she was a hot shit, who thought she wasn't good enough for anything, is about to hold 2-3 degrees. I am the house manager of a group of incredible women for the past year. I've had the privilege of walking beside these lovely women in recovery. Me, the only one who once couldn't manage her own life, now entrusted to help other women guide theirs. I'm also a transitional coordinator of a Strive Fist House, a nonprofit. Yeah. It's a nonprofit shared living house for men in recovery. That's something I would never thought I would be capable of doing. I never thought I was good enough, but this program taught me that my past does not disqualify me, it qualifies me. This month I'm achieving my goal that once felt impossible. I'm going into juvenile halls to share my story and carry the message, because I was that kid. I was that 12-year-old using meth. I was that teenager who thought addiction was normal. If I can reach even one young person before they go as far as I did, then my pain was purpose. Today I have relationships restored that I never thought I would get back. I have trust rebuilding. I have connection. I have people in my life who see me, respect me, and love me, not because I'm perfect, because I'm honest. None of this happened because I suddenly became strong. It happened because I surrendered. I worked the steps. I listened to my sponsor, my mentors. I accepted mentorship. I so showed up when I didn't want to. Believe me, I didn't want to. I still don't want to. I'm a runner, okay? I run. I will abandon. I will run. I was trying to run right now.
No joke.
No joke. I prayed when I didn't feel like it. I did the work. My higher power did for me what I could never do for myself. I used to think I wasn't good enough, not good enough to be a mother, not good enough to be loved, not good enough to succeed, not good enough to lead. AA taught me that sobriety isn't about being good enough. It's about being willing. If you are new tonight, if you are sitting here thinking your life is too broken to rebuild, let me tell you, I'm living proof that it's not. From addiction at 9 years old, from becoming a mother at 13, from jail, homelessness, losing my child, from fentanyl, hopelessness, to honor roll, leadership, service, restored relationships, purpose, and hope. That is the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what tomorrow holds. I still grieve. I still have hard days. And I still really don't want to do come to meetings sometimes. I work the steps, but I do, you know? But I face them sober. I face them with faith. I face them with community. My name is Gabriela Ramirez, and I'm an alcoholic and addict, and by the grace of my higher power, my sponsors, my mentors, and the rescue mission, and the Strive House, this program, I'm sober today.
All right, let's give Gabby another round of applause.